Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every Friday, we get smarter about basketball. We bring in Brian Geisinger at @BGeis_Bird, Pack Bride, BuzzBeat Podcast, 24/7 Sports, a savant. All right, let's get to some weekend hoops. First of all, Brian, how art thou?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Doing all right. There's a lot of hockey and a lot of basketball to watch now. I have been kept quite busy. I'm sure you have as well. You watch more basketball than I do. Let's start. And I tried to do this for each of the games that mattered to us this weekend. So let's start with, I basically said, this is what has to happen, or this is what I'm thinking about going in. I want to start with the Duke-Wake game. Duke is building a resume with a ton of road wins in the league, some of which actually masquerade as quad one wins, amazingly enough. I didn't think the league had them. But Duke's won, I think, 6 of their last 7 away from home, except for the one at North Carolina. That's the only loss. What have you seen from them? I'm always skeptical when a big win is built on the 3-point shot. That happened at Pitt, and they couldn't really replicate that again. And then it happened last, Wednesday night at Miami. They shot the eyes out in the first half. What have you seen from them in terms of things that I think are repeatable going forward?
Yeah, they had a big shooting night last Saturday at FSU too.
Right.
10 of 16 on threes and that. I do think it's notable that they had a huge shooting night without Jared McCain going off.
Right.
Like, he's been such a huge barometer for their spacing, their movement, shooting, their 3-point offense this year. You have McCain that has just a so-so night offensively by his, lofty standards. Obviously, teams still have to guard him. But look, Miami was really like ripe for Duke to just detonate on them. I mean, one, I think even myself underestimated how much Miami was going to miss Jordan Miller and Isaiah Wong.
Yeah.
From last year's team, and then of course Matthew Cleveland and Nigel Pack, who are two very good starters, are out. And Miami likes to hedge screens, and that means Filipowski gets into space and he gets to spray out wide on the short roll to shooters. Like, it really is the kind of defensive coverage that can get Duke's offense rolling. We saw that happen the last time they played Wake in Cameron a couple of weeks ago when Wake was hedging and blitzing side ball screens, and that turned into a problem with Mark Mitchell driving to the driving rim in the middle of the floor. But as far as Duke goes, I mean, I think, getting Proctor back, getting him going, that was really, really good. I think when Filipowski makes jump shots like that, it just sort of like adds a really another sort of like 5-out component,
right,
to the team's offense. And if we're just sticking with like players, I mean, I think this has been ongoing for a few weeks now. Perhaps we even discussed this last week, but like, this version of Mark Mitchell is like, I don't know, the game against Miami and some of these other recent outings, I felt like the vision for what Duke was supposed to look like this year is starting to sort of like come into picture. Cause like, Mitchell's just played, I mean, he's been excellent. He was so good defensively against Wake Forest. His offense is coming along. Like, he's hitting some of those slot threes when teams are leaving him wide open. He's making plays as a cutter. And like, to me, that's like really when he's at his best, when he's into playing slash and kick and also moving around as a cutter. He and Roach had a really nice like give and go on the left side of the floor in the first half of the Miami game. So, and then finally, would even mention like Sean Stewart coming online as like a, not just, hustle guy off the bench, but his athleticism is different. It gives them another dimension. And he's not just like a pretty good athlete, for a 6'8", 6'9" guy. He is a like 99th percentile vertical athlete. And I think he's better than he was 2 weeks ago. So what does Sean Stewart look like 2 weeks from now? Like, I know growth like that isn't like linear necessarily, but I think having he and Mitchell play like this makes Duke more versatile. They're more athletic. They can do more stuff defensively. And I just think John Shire and his staff deserve a big credit for what they're doing defensively too, because during this winning streak, I think everyone but Wake Forest was held under 1 point per possession in the game. And Wake was right at 1 point per possession. And you know that offense is one of the, you know, it's a top 20 offense in the country. So they're getting it done on both ends. And I think Mitchell's fingerprints have been all over everything.
Yeah, their defense is different. They're not blocking a lot of shots. They're not forcing a lot of turnovers. Mm-hmm. They're basically just making you work harder, much harder, for the shots that you're getting. And I think what they're doing is probably making you take the shots that they want you to take, which is in so many ways key to any team's defense. Really quick to Wake. Well, go ahead. You want to say them?
We're just going to say they're switching really well. Like Mitchell, and they've done some of these cross matches in recent games, right? Like against Miami, Mitchell starts out on Norchad Omier. Against Boston College, he starts out on Quentin Post, so you can switch more stuff. Right. Obviously, you can switch with Filipowski. And it does sort of feel like they're just throwing a bunch of different stuff at teams, because you can guard pick and roll every way with Filipowski. You can also switch with him. So they just got different stuff, and they can take away maybe the first or second thing you want to do offensively, and all of a sudden you're trying to, you know, chase switches and play matchup ball. And they're doing a nice job sort of like filling in gaps on the backside whenever you think you might have a size mismatch in the post.
So Wake has almost nothing on their resume that suggests they can beat good teams, right? They've got really the one win over Florida. We know they're good because we've watched them play, and they have good mm-hmm. players, but it's been hard for them, especially away from home, and this game is a home game. Where is the breakthrough for Wake Forest? What has held them back?
I mean, the breakthrough might be tomorrow. Like,
right.
That game,
you know, it kind of has like to be
a coin toss. Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, you did mention Florida. Like, Florida's very good.
They're
a top 20 team with a couple NBA players on the roster. So, like, that team's no joke. I don't know. I think there is something to be said about, like, beating the teams, you know, you're generally supposed to beat. I mean, maybe you could say the Pittsburgh loss, the State loss, the FSU loss, those were some tough ones this year. But I think it's one of those things where you've got to, like, take, as opposed to thinking about this, like, as, like, win losses. And so just bear with me for the second.
Sure.
For a second, like, because ultimately that's how these resumes are compiled and looked at and analyzed. And, you know, teams are picked for the NCAA tournament off of it. But it's like, if you pan out and look at their full season of work, this is a team that's basically a top 30 team on both sides of the court, offense, defense. They've got a really tough offense to stop. It's hard to keep the ball in front of them. They've got, you know, two really versatile big guys that can play make, that can switch, that can protect the rim, that can post up, that can shoot a little bit too. Like, it's just one of those things where you've got to, like, and this would maybe be the most generous read of it, but if you pan out and take the 20,000 foot view of their resume and don't go through everything line by line, they absolutely light up as a tournament team to me, and a team that, like, could absolutely get to the Sweet 16, right? Could win a couple of games, like, again, against Miller, Salas, good luck. Especially when they've got, like, guys like Reed and Carr able to sort of, like, protect the rim and be mismatch pieces on offense too.
So if it was a football committee, they would just use the eye test, because it's just the mood when we're talking about a football committee. But the basketball committee, these people historically stare at team sheets, and they see road records, which are not good for Wake Forest, which is, I just want to grab it, 2-7. They see quad one, which is 1-5. And I mean, look, you and I are in agreement really about them, right? Like, I watch them and I go, they're good. But then you look at, you know, their team sheet, which is just, I mean, numbers and dashes, and you go, well, they really haven't accomplished much, no matter how good they are. All right, let me get to North Carolina. What, like, I am not put off by the way they're playing. Some regression to the mean in terms of their defense. Their offense hasn't been good enough to overcome their defense in some of their losses. I still think that, you know, losing on the road in the ACC isn't a death knell. It's not, you know, but the way the narrative is now, Virginia loses a game on the road, by the way, even though they got smoked by Virginia Tech. Whatever. I mean, you just got smoked. It's fine. Yeah. It happens. Who cares? Yeah. Honestly, I don't care how much you lost by. I really don't. But they lost by a lot. And now they're like teetering on the edge of not being in the tournament. Like, it would not happen in any other major conference, but it's suddenly like it's the new thing to treat the ACC like that. What is North Carolina? Where is the area that they need to improve the most?
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, first off, I'm very excited for the UVA-UNC matchup. This is one I've had circled for a while, and I think it's going to be really fun to see. Like, the way Virginia's defense, like, matches up with UVA's sort of, like, primary – or with UNC's primary guys.
Right.
You know, Jordan Minor on Armando Bacot, Ryan Dunn. I mean, obviously, he's everywhere defensively. Right. Him on Harrison Ingram. Reese Beekman on RJ Davis. Like, as Davis has just floated and dominated around the ACC this year, like, oh, well, you know, the best guard defender in the country is, you know, coming to town. And Dante Harris off the bench is another good guard defender that could match up with Cadeau. So, like, I kind of like how, at least in terms of just, like, on paper, how UVA can match up with these guys, at least defensively. And, like, Virginia's got to get it into the mud. And so, for me, if this for UNC, like, what I'll be seeing is, like, if Virginia is able to get this thing down into the mud, can UNC win one of those games, right, or pull one of those games out? I suppose, you know, again, Virginia showed that they can do this even last weekend with the way they beat Wake Forest. It's sort of like one of those games. I don't imagine this being below the 50s. Or can UNC's offense just be overwhelming in this ball game? You know, what does Hubert Davis have up his sleeve to get RJ loose? Can he get hot from three? What does that open up? Does Cormac Ryan stay hot after after his big shooting performance the other day against VT? So for me, that's sort of like, this is just a contrast of styles. And I think I'll be curious to see, like, if UNC is either just, like, dominant enough to get it to their style, their pace, their offensive efficiency, or if it does get to where UVA wants it to, can UNC sort of, like, still pull it out? Fascinating to see this weekend.
All right, a couple of minutes left with Brian Geisinger here. Let me ask you this. I know you you went on Pac Pride with Corey at a podcast after the loss to Syracuse on Wednesday night, I guess it was. It was Wednesday night? I think it was Wednesday night. And honestly, Tuesday night, I thought the play was good. I thought the pass was there late to DJ Horn, and it allowed the defense to recover. If the pass is there on time, then DJ has enough room to get the shot off, probably uncontested. Doesn't mean he's going to make it, but then we're not sitting here crying about a foul or no foul. am I crazy in that while DJ Burns has a value offensively, it isn't strong enough for him to be playing as much as he's playing because he's such a liability defensively? Or do they have to have him on the court for even DJ Horn's offense to work?
I mean, he is important. He's very important for them offensively because the post-ups with Burns, you know, that leads to cut baskets. Him as a passer is really, I think, like, when his post-up offense is sort of, like, at its best, because it means he's forcing a double team, and that means cut layups and cut dunks. So that means kick out threes, which, like, State has a tough time creating open threes. They have a tough time getting the ball to the rim in the half court. And so Burns post-ups, not only does it mean sort of like, oh, it creates some passing opportunities, it creates passing opportunities for like very lucrative, you know, shot types. So Burns is valuable. And I don't, maybe they haven't found the right balance for him all season in terms of like what his role should look like, you know, what the, how they should work the platoon with Ben Middlebrooks. They've played those guys together some. They've dabbled with, you know, small ball lineups with Mo Diarra at the five and, you know, four guards, or with Dennis Parker Jr. Like maybe they could try some of that to sort of even like lessen the load for Burns enough. I think a lot of it ends up being sort of like matchup dependent. I mean, Syracuse is tough. They've got a really good point guard in Judah Mintz.
Yeah.
They come out the start of that game, and the plan was to go put DJ Burns in pick and roll.
Yeah.
And they did. And then, like, the reason why Chris Bell got a lot of those catch and shoot threes, which was because, like, Syracuse was running pick and roll. He was spotted up in the corner. They got the ball to the middle of the floor, and then Malik Brown kicked out, right? And then he was just getting catch and shoot three after catch and shoot three. So it's tough. And if it's just DJ Horn out there as like the main offensive threat,
right. I mean,
Middlebrooks can do stuff offensively. So it's not like he's like a zero on that end. He's actually a pretty useful offensive player. But as far as like guys who are probably going to conceivably could command an extra defender to guard them, there's only two guys on State's roster, you know, right. Like it's Horn and Burns. And I would just say on that last play, because I rewatched it yesterday, like I liked the call from State. I thought it was clever. I mean, I think it's funny that like a lot of State fans are, you know, they spend years mad that Keats apparently doesn't run plays, which
right.
is obviously not true. Then he runs a play and then they're mad about that. I mean, you just can't, it turns out like all that people care is like wins, losses.
Right.
Like,
isn't that surprising?
It's that results based. But what I want to say is like rewatching it, I first saw it live, I thought the pass from O'Connell was late.
Okay.
I think there was a reason for that. Chris Bell, who again, like, I mean, okay. he made his mark hitting a bunch of threes in this game. He's guarding Diarra on that last play. But if you rewatch it, he actually sees it coming. Like, he sees Burns coming across the lane to go through the elevator door. He slides sort of like underneath Diarra, and then he ends up on the other side of the screens. He's just behind. He's sort of like lurking behind mm-hmm. Horn.
Okay.
And if there was any reason why O'Connell sort of like double clutched the ball before he threw the pass, I think it was because he was worried about, you know, Bell possibly jumping the pass and stealing it. So there's a reason why, I mean,
okay.
O'Connell's a really trusty guy with the ball, can really initiate offense and pass. And I sort of wonder if Bell maybe sort of like not only made him delay the pass, but then also O'Connell threw it up the floor. So like, Horn had to like take a step or two to his
yeah.
right to even catch the ball off, you know, sort of like off his access or off his axis. And so, I don't know, Bell just made a big defensive play. And like sometimes that happens late in mm-hmm. games.
No question about that. Yeah, they need like, to me, the best coaching move of the whole night was, who is it, Adrian Autry, not calling timeout on Syracuse's possession after Middlebrooks, I guess he missed the second free throw and left the game tied, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Not calling the timeout and letting Kadir Copeland just work because it left Burns on the court.
Oh, well, actually, that was after Horn. I think it was after Horn missed.
Oh, yeah. So Horn missed, right.
Yeah.
Okay. But
Horn missed.
But
yeah.
last sequence.
Point remains.
Right.
Yeah. Point remains.
He left Burns on the court. All right, man. Do you have faith in the Wolfpack winning at home against Boston College?
I think they should. I think they can win tomorrow. They have a blueprint for how to beat BC. They're tough, but the rest of the way looks pretty brutal after Saturday.
At Florida State,
they better win Saturday, basically.
Yeah, win Saturday and then win four in Charlotte. That's where.
Yeah, perfect.
That's the best way to get into the NCAA tournament. Brian Geisinger at @BGeis_Bird 24/7 Sports Buds Beat Podcast. My man, we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, right where you want to be. Have a good weekend, you
Thanks,
guys.
Thanks, man. Exactly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.